Welcome to episode 30 of Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Adaban Cipher, and my latest, The Maven and Reeve mystery series. And I'm here with my co-host, the divine Megan Daly, celebrity teacher librarian, blogger at Children's Books Daily, and author of Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. Megan and I, along with our good friend Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So, Megan Daly, what's been happening in the divine kingdom of Megan?
Well, thank you for calling me Divine. I have been reading Wombat Divine to my preppies all this week, and we've been discussing what the word divine means, and they've said things like beautiful and fabulous and wonderful. So I'm going to take your divine and run with that. So, I do love Wombat Divine. It's one of my favourite Christmas books. It's just gorgeous. But I have been, as well as reading Wombat Divine, I have been watching The Beekeeper unpack several deliveries to the house this week. He has quite the, look, I love a bit of online shopping. He has quite an, I would say, issue with purchasing from all manner of random places, old honey tins and honey bottles, jars.
Yeah, you mentioned those last week.
Well, he has he's just received some from Germany and France. And the one from Germany was extremely heavy. It's dark brown glass and it's got like a kind of bottom that looks like it's been sitting in the sand. It's beautiful. And it's got this gorgeous bee on the top of it with this unusual handle. And then the one from France is quite old. It's a tiny little tin. Honey used to be stored in tins many years ago. And this one has got gorgeous images all around it. It's very, very old. I probably should have asked him the age of it before I started recording this, but I did not. But we have quite the collection in the house. I've had to make a lot of room for honey jars and tins, which literally just keep arriving on the doorstep. And I'm like, when did you buy that? And, you know, he gets so excited about them. And some of them even arrive with the honey in them. And honey doesn't go off. It doesn't deteriorate. So honey can be, I don't know. I don't know if it could be 100 years old, but it could certainly be 30 or 40 years old. And you could still technically eat it. But wow, he's purchasing for the jars and the tins.
That's amazing. Well, clearly we're going to need photos. You'll be needing to put some photos on social media and perhaps one in the show notes, which, of course, you'll find at yourkidsnextread.com. Where do you keep them all?
Oh, look, in various places. There's a hole in the stairwell. There's a whole shelf of jars, which are quite beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then in the kitchen I've got what used to be my bookshelves, and I have retained one as a bookshelf, and now the other one is for honey tins. And they are, look, they're very beautiful. I love them as well. I just think it's hilarious that they just keep turning up, and there's just so many of them. And one day we may, in our old age, when we are also being, we want to be those like old couple that are like the people at the Olympics, being the volunteers. We think that would be really cool at the,
yeah,
you know,
you got to get a shirt. Yeah.
Well, when Brisbane hosts the Olympics, we think, you know, we'll be elderly enough to wear those ugly shirts and be the little hosts. And around the same time in our old age, we will also set up a museum of honey tins and honey jars, and we'll be like the weird beekeeping couple.
That sounds great. I reckon that's life goals right there. Well, I have not been wrangling honey tins of any kind. I have been attending gigs with Book Boy. As we talked about last week, he had a couple of gigs and then a maths exam. So we've kind of, you know, survived all of that. And then we've got more gigs this weekend and then a drama exam. So, you know, it's kind of like that's just pretty much the pattern of our lives right now is that. And in case you're wondering, the reason that I go to all the gigs still, I mean, I have been lugging guitars and amps and who knows what else around for many years now because he has been performing professionally since he was 13. So it's been a long, long road that I have been sitting in various places on my own. But he's not yet 18. And so he now performs in licensed venues and has been doing so for a couple of years. And so I have to go because he has to have a supervising adult with him. And the supervising adult has to be over 25. And his oldest friend is at, you know, that local friend at the moment is about 23. So he can't even take a friend. He has to turn up with his mum. It's so rock and roll. What can I say?
So rock and roll.
So yeah, so I'm under strict instructions that I have to basically sit somewhere where he can't see me because I can't sit in the front row and take photos. That's not allowed. Or video, unless, of course, I've been asked to take some for social media, in which case I'm allowed to sneak across, get the video, and then sneak back. And then I basically sit in a back corner by myself for 3 hours while he does his stuff. Locally, I take people with me. I, like, call all my friends and say, please come. I need someone to talk to. But otherwise, I take my iPad and I sit in a corner and I write stuff while I wait for him. It's all very creatively, you know. In sync, what can I say?
It is.
That's my life. All right, so that's exciting for everyone, I'm sure. But let's move on to our book mail this week, which is exciting. And I have no book mail this week, which is highly disappointing given, you know, we're this close to Christmas and surely I should be getting packages. But no. So it's all down to you, Megan. What have you got?
I was really pleased you had no book mail because I had too much book mail.
Oh, see, now you're just boasting. You're just like, look at you, just rubbing it in. Ha, Alison, I've got more book mail than you do.
I have so much book mail and I was hoping that I would be able to slot a few more in, so I was overjoyed that you had none. My first one is called Jacqueline, A Soldier's Daughter by Pierre Jacques Ober and Jules Ober, and many of you will remember that their CBCA shortlisted title, The Good Son, came out, I think, last year or the year before, and it was absolutely beautiful and took many school libraries by storm. Oh. It was fantastic. I think I'm going to just say it. I think I like Jacqueline, A Soldier's Daughter, even better than The Good Son. This is much more my kind of story. It is beautiful. It's a stunning production from Ford Street, and it's about Jacqueline, who always dreamt of having a sister. And amid the turmoil of a world at war, when the adults have seemingly gone mad, she embarks on a perilous journey and ultimately finds a sister in the most unexpected way. It's a really beautiful production. The images are stunning. I think I'll put up an image of the book in the show notes so you can see them. For those of you who've not seen The Good Son, you won't know that the images are all produced in miniatures and then they're photographed. They're beautiful. So there's actually not a lot of text. A lot of the story is carried in the images. It's very beautiful. And at the end of the book, there is a photograph of these two friends back when they first met and now as adults. It's just really incredibly heartwarming. It's a beautiful story of finding hope amidst war, and I really, really enjoyed that one. Changing gears. Cat Kid Comic Club. Book
that is
food.
A change of gears. Oh, that's whiplap. That's like a whiplash change of gears right there.
Oh, dear. This one's by Dave Pilkey and it's suitable for readers from 5+. I'm saying 5 because the smallest B is 5 and he is going to lose his little mind when he gets home and finds Cat Kid Comic Club Book 2 on his bed. He loved the first one. This one is a graphic novel. It is for much younger readers than his Dogman series. And it follows the adventures of Flippy, Molly, Little Petey, and 21 baby frogs.
21 baby frogs.
I know. So, you know, it's hilarious. There's not a lot to say about it because it's just funny. It's full of shenanigans. In fact, the shenanigans are nonstop. It's got really good storytelling and humor. I think Dave Pilkey does a very good job of fostering creativity and empathy in his stories, and his books are just ever popular.
Kids love them, don't they? Like, I just love them. Both of my boys were obsessed with Captain Underpants.
I know.
At different stages. And, you know, I had all these – it was so funny because I had I would talk about that. I would mention it, you know, or they would – or one of them would, you know, review it on something. And people would be like, oh, you know, but it's got misspellings and it's got this and it's got that. I'm like – Oh, really? No, they love them, you know? I think the
Yeah.
important thing with the Captain Underpants ones is that you like maybe read the first one together or something so that they
Yes.
do understand that that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Once you've done that though, like go for it. Go
Go for gold.
nuts.
I really have to say that I think this smaller Cat Kid comics, the young graphic novels that he's just done, I really would say they were the smallest bees kind of move in to like reading, because he cannot obviously read all of the words, but he can read the illustrations, and he just feels so grown up reading a graphic novel. And he proudly walked over to prep the other day with his Underdogs book, and like reading it the whole way over. He's just so proud of holding those books, and I think there's something to be said for that. So even if they can't read the words, reading the illustrations with graphic novels is such a great way to just develop that real confidence with reading. So I'm a big fan of all Dav Pilkey. Another little bit of a shift of gears. Now I'm going up to kind of middle grade, almost into YA, with the new one by Sharon Draper, which I did not even know was coming, and my mind was blown. It is called Out of My Heart by Sharon Draper, and this is a follow-up novel to her amazing acclaimed New York Times best-selling middle grade novel Out of My Mind, which I did for my Year 6 book club for many years in a row, because I just loved Out of My Mind, and I've been yet to find a 12, 13, 14-year-old child who has not enjoyed Out of My Mind. I have not yet read Out of My Heart, but I know it will be great, because the main character is a young girl called Melody. Well, she's a teen. And in Out of My Mind, we learn that she has cerebral palsy and she cannot walk or talk, but she's got a photographic memory. She can remember every detail of everything she has ever experienced. And she's smarter than most of the adults who try to diagnose her. And she's smarter than most of her classmates in her integrated classroom, but they dismiss her very much as mentally challenged because she cannot tell them otherwise. So that's Out of My Mind. And now in Out of My Heart, Melody is a year older and a bit braver, and she's not as brave as she wants to be. She's very, very scared of horses, and she's going on a summer camp, and one of the activities will be horseback riding, and she's trying to decide if that should be her next challenge. And kids at this riding camp, four differently abled kids going to welcome a child with cerebral palsy. It's just got all of the big issues in it, and I love this character of Melody. She's beautiful. So that is my middle grade novel recommendation of the moment. And then my final book is another one from Ford Street. This one is Rapper Bee: Poems to Give You a Buzz by Harry Lang and illustrated by Anne Ryan. This one arrived this week, and I have left this one on the kitchen table. I love a bit of poetry or a non-fiction book on the kitchen table, because it just encourages that reading over breakfast or afternoon tea when everybody's having a meltdown and you can't cut up the apples fast enough to get it into the small people with the low blood sugar. Anyway, so I do find a bit of a poetry book on the table is a good one, and this is fantastic. Harry Lang has done some other poetry books. He is a teacher. This one is perfect for readers from 6 up to 10 or 11. Really good one for school libraries. It's got really great illustrations and lots of interesting poems about eagles and cicadas and the life of a dollar coin. That was a good one. And the teacher from the past, about a lovely class who has a new teacher from the past when discipline was in full flight. And there's obviously a poem as well, a poem or two about bees. So really enjoyed that one, and all four of our children have enjoyed that one. So that is my four bits of book mail this week. Thank you for letting me take up all of the book mail time.
Do you have a kid aged 9 to 14 who loves to write, or one who'd love to write better? Send them on a creative writing quest with best-selling author Alison Tait. With 12 online modules, the course will take your young writer from ideas to finished story, with personalized video feedback from Alison on their complete masterpiece. Find out more at writercentre.com.au/quest. That's writercentre.com.au/quest.
All right, so we are now going to move on to our bingo question this week. And having given you all the book mail, the bingo question is one that I am going to pull out because it's about books for teen boys. And this is a topic that has been hot in the Your Kids Next Read Facebook community lately. It often is in the lead up to Christmas because, of course, everybody starts to think about the fact that perhaps their teen boy hasn't read anything for, you know, 6 months, and maybe, you know, they can give them the book that is going to change that and is going to get them off screens or whatever it is that they do instead and turn them into a reader. It is also has also been a bit of a topic in the wider world of publishing about, you know, sort of like, are there books for teen boys? And I think that we can pretty much categorically state that there are books for teen boys, quite a lot of books for teen boys. I think the problem with the teen boy thing, and I'm just going to say this up front, is that people kind of just put them in they kind of lump them in together. Like we're going to lump them in, we're going to have this group and they're just going to be teen boys and everybody knows what teen boys are like and teen boys do this and teen boys do that. And I think that the key to actually finding books that teen boys will really like is to stop thinking about them as a teenage boy and start thinking about them as an individual. It's like any kind of reader, you know, different people, different teen boys, like different kinds of books. And the interesting thing for me is I have the two teen boys, one is 17, one is 14, and I've watched them sort of both grow up. And okay, it's a group of two, I get it. Like there's a wider word out there, but they also have a lot of friends. So I have over the years met many, many teen boys. And the interesting thing about them is that they're all quite different. And my two in particular are really different readers. And what interests them about a book is a very, very different. And I think it's the key to kind of keeping them in touch with reading because, and I am going to say this as well, even my avid reader, even my voracious reader, book boy, who ran the book blog, who, you know, was on the Love Oz YA committee, who has been, you know, involved in books and loves books and, you know, when I say voracious reader, I am talking really, really voracious and a very wide reader and reading books, you know, at 12 or 13 that had moved into a lot of adult books even by that stage, but big non-fiction books as well as fiction and things like that. Even he stopped reading for pleasure from about 15 to about, I mean, he was still, when I say stopped, you know, occasionally still picking up books. He was still reviewing, I think, on Book Boy at about 15, but very soon after that he stopped because he was having to do so much more work for school. He was having to read books for school that weren't particularly books that he would have chosen to read, but they still took up time for reading.
Absolutely.
And they also seem to, interestingly enough, sap his reading energy. Like when you've got to wade your way through a book that you probably wouldn't have picked up, it does sap your energy for reading other things. So even he stopped reading for a couple of years there. And it's only been in the last, you know, year or so that he has really picked it up again. And he has picked it up again on the back of recommendations from his friends. He has a lot of girlfriends who are avid readers, and he will read, you know, if they will suggest things to him, he will suggest things to them. And so it's mostly from them that he's actually getting his reading recommendations. And every once in a while he will bring a book up and say, I think you should read this. Or to my husband in particular, I think you'd really like this one, Dad, you know. And that's been an interesting thing to watch. And I think in many ways he's probably come back to reading earlier than a lot of boys do. My brother, who is a very, very clever man, he didn't read a book in high school.
Yeah.
I don't think he picked
– hear that.
Surrounded by readers. I don't think he picked up a book. And it wasn't until he was probably in his early 20s that he started to really read again. And now he reads heavy literary tomes that, you know, do my head in. My younger son is a totally different kind of a kid. We've talked about this. He's an active kid. He discovered survival stories when he was about I don't know, 10 or so. And he that was the key for him, was reading those. And that's what, I mean, he read Wimpy Kid, and remember we talked about this a couple of episodes ago, I had the new Wimpy Kid in, and yes. I said, I'm going to give this to my 14-year-old. And he just hoovered it up. And then, because I said to him, oh, when you finished it, give it to someone else, you know, and he goes, oh, I'll give it to my mate, because we have a Wimpy Kid thing going, you know. Yeah. And I'm like, right, great, hand it on. So, you know, he did all that. He was much more of a typical reader. He loved Treehouse. He loved, you know, all of those sorts of books. Getting him to actually actively take off on something that was a bit more meaty, it took survival stories. And he still doesn't read a lot. I will keep giving him books. But now that he's nearly 15, he's probably reading less. The one I gave him most recently that he seemed to like was Mark Smith's new book, If Not Us. And he has that on his bedside table, and I'm noticing the bookmark moving. So he is working his way through that. He loved The Outsiders by Essie Hinton. I just don't think you can go wrong with that as a book for, you know, teenage boys of about 13 or 14. So I gave him that one, and he asked me, I think we talked about this a few episodes ago, he's been asking me for sad books. And I actually gave him, do you know what I gave him for that one as well, was The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas. Because he has a thing for sneakers as well, and there's a whole sneaker thing that runs through that I thought he would like. I haven't heard back on any of those as yet. But I do have on my website a list of 60 tried and tested books for 13 to 14-year-old boys that I put together with his help last year. So these are books that he and his friends, aged 13 and 14 at the time, have read and enjoyed. And the names that came up regularly there were Kwame Alexander. He loved The Crossover. He loved Holes by Louis Sacha. Sacha, is that how you say it? Yes. He loved it. Like, that's a classic, and he absolutely loved it. He loved the track series, Ghost by Jason Reynolds. He really loved that. Probably more, I mean, you know, like, I think that's generally more in the middle grade sort of area. But, you know, the thing I think it's important to do is, as I say, find the kid's interest and follow that, rather than necessarily thinking, oh, he's, you know, 15, he should be reading this kind of book. Like, just look for what he's interested in and give him books like that. He loved a book called The Skeleton Tree by Ian Lawrence, which is a survival story that we picked up when we were in Canada. And we were in Canada. It's a survival story set in Canada, and he absolutely loved that. So that's something else to look for. Those kind of books, I think, kids often, of boys that age, are often interested in. He doesn't like books where the parents disappear for no reason still, even at 14. He's not keen on those. But, you know, like, as long as there's some kind of, you know, survival element to it, he's on board with that. The other thing, of course, that boys, you know, look for in these sorts of, this sort of age, things like the Cherub series by Robert Muchamore comes up all the time in the Your Kids Next Read community, because it's fast, it's action, it's spies. It is worth noting that the series content escalates in that series.
Quite dramatically,
yep. So just be aware, like, the what's in the first, like, by the time I think you get to two or three, things start to change a lot. So, you know, but I'm also at the point too where, like, with this sort of age group, when you're talking about that sort of younger teen, you know, 14, 15 sort of age, or 13, 14, they will stop reading if they're not interested. Like, the book just goes to the back, you know, down the side of the bed, and you never see it again. So I think it's worth, you know, looking at that sort of thing as well. And, of course, science fiction really starts to make a big impact in, you know, with teen boys. The Scythe series, Ark of a Scythe by Neil Schusterman, is one that comes up all the time. And of course, Matthew Riley has The Secret Runners of New York. And Matthew Riley books, in general with teen boys, are huge favorites because they are strong on plot. Like, there is stuff going on all the time. And I think that, you know, it's worth, you know, again, it's about a content thing. You need to think about the age of the kid and what's going on. But so with Book Boy, you know, he kind of moved on to Stephen King by the time he was about 13. And I just had to trust that if it terrified him, he would put it down. We didn't go to It or anything like that. But the short stories, and, you know, some of the other books, you know, he loved. Again, I think boys that age are looking for a really strong plot. They want You know, they want things to be happening all the time. And then Helen Chabadi's Bro was another one. It's an older book, and it was a great, it was a big favourite with Book Boy. It's set in a high school. It's sort of gang rivalry. He read it. It was a recommendation from your dear friend Trish after he had read The Outsiders and really liked it, and we were looking for similar kind of vibe. It's called Bro, and it's got that sort of, you know, gang thing going on that but a more contemporary version of that. So I've got several lists that I'm going to put in the show notes, the links to those. You'll find them at alisontate.com. They are tried and tested books for boys 13 to 14 years old, which is, and the reason I kind of concentrate on that level is, A, that was when I was able to actually get information out of my children. But also that's the kind of age where you start to lose them. That's the kind of age where they start to stop reading. And so that's the kind of age where if you can kind of just keep them vaguely on track over those few years, you can, you know, find that they will come back to it.
Yeah. And I agree. I think you have to not stress if you've been one of those parents and educators, parents or educators who have set up things from the start with your child or the young people in your life, and you've you know, put all of those really good reading strategies in place and they've been exposed to a wide variety of books, they will come back to it. I always think back to my little brother who's 10 years younger than me. He just was not a reader in his teen years, and now he's an absolutely avid reader. I have to say, my husband was a massive reader of teen fiction and of fantasy novels, which I used to get terribly embarrassed about until I discovered that every male was reading fantasy novels. But he
Why were
really,
you embarrassed?
Because I thought they were lesser than.
No, they're amazing. The world building in them is amazing.
I used to, there's a divine Trent at Avid Reader in Brisbane. I'd love Trent. And I used to, Dan would want to go in and ask Trent questions about what he should read next. And I would make him go in without me because I was so embarrassed. I now understand that was very silly of me.
Daily, you've missed a whole world. There's a lovely man who works in my local post office, and we regularly have conversations about, he would be in his late 40s, early 50s probably. And he still reads a lot of fantasy, and he's, you know, often telling me about, you know, books he's reading and what he's doing. And, you know, he just loves it. It's like, you know, it's his escape. It's his happy place. And
yeah,
that's what I think we want for boys too, is we want to give them, we want them to understand that there is somewhere else to go in their minds if they want to. And it doesn't have to be fed to them by a screen or by a game or by whatever, you know?
I know. I really do. I really understand that now. And I think I really understood it when I saw my little brother take up fantasy. Dan was really good with feeding him books, and he now owns Dan's collection of Raymond E. Feist books and has read them over and over again. And he sort of was a big part of Jeremy's reading development as a young adult. And I have worked at boys' schools and I've worked at co-ed schools, but my biggest source of information on books for boys of this age has always been Tricia Buckley, my divine friend. There's that word again. She's just always known what to feed boys next. And some of the ones that she's recommended over the years to me have come up time and time again in Your Kids Next Read, and I've also given them to teen boys in my life. I remember that we had, when we both worked together at West Moreton Anglican College, we had Jack Heath come out as a writer in residence. He was approximately 6 years old.
He still looks 15. Every time I see him, I'm like, surely, like, at some point you have to age. I think he's like Dorian Wilde. I think he's got like one of those mirrors in the attic. He's so fresh.
He is. And his writing.
His writing is so fresh. That's the other brilliant thing.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. And he does exactly what you just talked about, this plot-driven, really action-packed books. His Liars series is unbelievably popular. And, you know, I highly recommend Jack Heath. I also, of course, really like the work of Tristan Banks, who again does that sort of very high action. He comes from a script-writing background, and a lot of his books have that very movie feel to them. So Tristan Banks is another one. I love Will Kostarkis. And again, Tricia and I have sort of drooled over darling Will Kostarkis over many years now. And Great author, is it? And we just loved his, and so many teen boys have loved his series as well. And my 13-year-old really loved Momentum, my 13-year-old daughter. I really like Scott Gardner, Changing Gear and Off the Map have been recent favourite reads of mine that I thought would be perfect for boys around that age. And I've just received in the mail the latest book by Philip Gwynn, who is I just adore. And it's called The Break, and it looks fantastic. So I'm thinking that would be a good one for any young male that wants something around surfing, and it's set in Bali, all sorts of things happening. Invisible Boys by Holden Shepherd, Henry Hamlet's Heart by Rhiannon Wilde. I really liked Catching Teller Crow by Anne Boleyn Quaymolina and Ezekiel Quaymolina. And as you know, I just like saying Anne Boleyn Quaymolina and Ezekiel Quaymolina, so I try and slip them into this podcast whenever I can. And then my final recommendation would be all of the work by Claire Zorn, but in particular One Would Think the Deep, which I gave to my little brother a couple of years ago when it came out. It's a surfy kind of book, surfy read, and he just loved it, thought she nailed the surf side of things. He runs an online learn to surf course, so he should know what he's talking about, and he thought that Claire Zorn nailed it. So if you've got a boy who's really into surfing, or any teen who's really into surfing, I'd highly recommend One Would Think the Deep.
And also, let's look at, like, what about people like Michael Jared Bauer, who's been writing in this space for years, writes brilliantly in this space, has been doing it for years. The last one I think that book boy read, and is also recommended by Tricia in one of my lists, is The Things That Will Not Stand. It's all set at one day at an open, at a university event, you know, so it's that kind of like, you know, that point where kids are you know, you go to uni to reinvent yourself, or, you know, many kids go to university to reinvent themselves, and it's all about, you know, that. And then, you know, Stephen Herrick, I mean, we talked about his earlier, he's got a new one out called How to Repaint a Life.
And I loved The Bogan Mondrian.
So I mean, there's a wealth of choices out there, but it comes back every single time to not just tarring them all with the teen boy brush, but actually getting to know what it is that your kid is actually interested in reading about. Like, are they interested in art? You know, find books that have all the things that, you know, you would want, but also with the art theme or the music theme or the, you know, some aspect. And never ever, I think the other thing to always remember too is we pigeonhole them. We can do that, and I have done that with particularly Bookboy Junior in the past, and I think I've told this story before about how he came home with the verse novel that he had absolutely loved, that he then consumed overnight. I think it was a Kwame Alexander one, and he and I would never in a million years have thought of giving it to him. So, you know, I guess the other thing is to, that was at a school library. So the importance of the school library for having those choices available that they may not stumble across themselves, you know, even with the best will in the world, I would not have thought to give him that. So, you know, I think it's important to recognize that, and also the importance of, you know, friends. You know, are there friends with us? Are they? You know, are they listening? Are they, you know, are they listening to what, you know, who, you know, the friend recommendations that Bookboy's getting are probably different to what I would give him as well. So that was a long and involved, it's a big topic, and I understand that. But I think it's just important to recognize that it, you know, teenage boys like reading lots of different things, not just necessarily a coming of age story about a teenage boy. So I think it's really important to make sure that we are offering them lots of different choices. All right, let's move on quickly because we have raved. Let's talk about our quick tips. What have you got for us?
I'm actually going to stay with what we've been talking about. I'm going to read you a section from my book, Raising Readers, which your son, Joe, wrote for me. Because it's a really good, he wrote a really beautiful passage in my book around keeping teens reading. And he wrote this: I've always read widely, including books that I may not be the target audience for, be it books for girls or books that are sometimes considered too old for someone my age. But reading these books, I believe, furthers a young person's understanding of the world. Teenagers, especially boys, generally stop reading or read less when they turn 14 or 15. There are a few possible reasons for this. Often it is around this age that you start to read and analyze books for school, so there is less time to read for enjoyment. Another reason is that young people may wish to start reading more grown-up books and their parents may not let them. I think this is a mistake. I'm not saying that parents should let their children read whatever they want, as there is some material in books that is not appropriate to expose a young person to, but I suggest that parents read the book first and think about how bad it would really be to let their child read it. When I turned 13, I started reading more books that were considered to be for adults from authors such as Stephen King and books such as All the Light We Cannot See. Because my mother had read these books before, she knew what they were about and that they posed little or no threat if I were to read them. Books such as Game of Thrones are ones I am not allowed to read yet.
Oh, I haven't read this for years. How funny.
Oh, no. I also read books that are for girls or aimed at girls or books with girl protagonists, because a good book is a good book no matter who the target audience is. I just love that, and I thought that was a really nice quick tip from a young person themselves.
Beautiful. I was very proud of him for that. I'd just like to say I had no input. He wrote the whole thing himself, and I was really, I just thought, yeah, okay, good. We're on the right track.
Tick.
All right, so I've got a couple of quick tips, and it's out of my Writing for Kids series on my website at alisontate.com, and it's about how to write comics, which, of course, you know, with graphic novels, this one came up a couple of years ago, and with graphic novels being so popular, you know, that whole idea of comics or graphic illustration is really, like, kids are absolutely loving it. So I asked Shane W. Smith, who is an author who writes graphic novels. He writes graphic novels for adults, and I'd met him. I took the boys to a comic gong, you know, like a convention thing, a few years ago, and I had interviewed him for the podcast about how he writes graphic novels, and he often gave great reading recommendations to me for the boys, and, you know, is an enthusiastic member of the Your Kids Next Read Facebook group as well. Anyway, so he has three top tips for kids who want to write comics. The first one is that there are no rules. So Shane says there's a lot to keep in mind when you're putting together a comic script, but thankfully one of those things is that, you know, it doesn't have to be a rigid script format. There are no real rules for how you have to lay out your script or what you need to include. You don't even have to write a script. Like in the olden days of Marvel Comics, writers would produce a short story synopsis and then leave pretty much everything else up to the artist. Or you could go to the other extreme and write pages of description for every single panel. The only thing you have to really bear in mind is how important clarity is. So you've got to be very, very clear about what you're doing, particularly if you're giving your script to a comic artist to actually create the illustration around. So you've got to keep that idea very clear. The second tip is that there should only be one action per panel. And Shane says that one of the most common mistakes that writers make with their first scripts is to include multiple actions, you know, in a panel. So he gives an example of, you know, writing a panel description that says Detective Walker crosses the room to his desk and sits down. Impossible to depict in a single comic panel. So when you're writing your own comics, you know, walking across the room is one panel and sitting down is another panel. Yeah. So you've got to kind of look at how many, you know, what happens in a panel. And this is interesting too, because he says, you know, if you wrote a panel description that said he blinks in surprise, it's only four words, so therefore one action. What could possibly be wrong with it? But in actual fact, it takes three consecutive panels to depict a blink. Open, shut. So you kind of got to think about, you know, how many panels you want and what's going on in those things. So you've got to kind of think about a comic panel in much the same way as you would a photograph. And then the other thing you've got to think about, the third tip, is to think about your reader's eyes. You've got to think visually, and it's one of the greatest challenges and amazing opportunities facing, you know, comics writers. If you're writing a graphic novel, you've got to always have in your mind what it's going to look like. And it helps to know, for instance, that a reader's eye is going to travel down the page in a sort of lazy Z shape. So you want to think about where you're going to position your characters and their speech bubbles and the direction of their actions to also travel along those lines and help guide the reader's eyes as they go through. And I don't know if you can hear that, but ProcrastiPub, he's very excited by that tip.
Yeah.
And the bonus tip is to have fun when you're writing your comics. So I'll put the link in the show notes for that. But I think there's some really interesting things to think about there if you are, you know, wanting to write and draw your own comics.
Sounds great. Love it.
All right. Let's wrap it up, Megan. We've chatted a lot today. There's been some waffle. So what are we doing this week? Tell me all about it.
Well, I am shopping for a teen and a tween. We have had to get clothes ready for a wedding for four children, and I have discovered that boys are quite uncomplicated with what they wear. I have always been slightly traumatized by shopping for my daughters, particularly now that they are at that tween and teen stage. And so what I tend to do is first caffeinate myself, have a gin ready for when I get home. And then for the actual shopping, I choose to do absolutely nothing else. Like, I cannot cast my eye over anything that might be of interest to me. I have to focus entirely, steely focus, and I have to find the sales assistant in each shop that looks most like the vibe of each of my children, and like beetle towards them, accost them, tie them up if I need to, and say, could you please help my daughter? Because otherwise, we've had moments where we've been screaming at each other in change rooms, and it's really traumatic shopping for teenage and tween daughters. So I'm just, you know, I'm stealing myself. That's
hilarious. I don't have that problem. Shopping for teen boys is quite different. You just go and they hate shopping. Neither of them. My younger son is very interested in clothes. He's quite specific about what he wants to wear. He gives me very clear ideas of what that is, and often I get links to things that he like randomly. There'll just be a link to something that he likes, and it's a very specific vibe. There's a lot of white shoes and white socks in my life right now. The older one, and generally speaking with both of them, if I see something that looks like it could be useful, I buy it. I don't buy a lot because they tend to wear the same things over and over and over again. And if they like it, I buy one in a different color. That's it.
No, I don't buy anything for my daughters anymore. It is literally put back outside the room or handed back to me. Do you have the receipt? Take it back immediately.
Oh, well, that's going to get a lot cheaper for you then. Just don't buy them anything.
And then they look like they've been pulled out of a dumpster because they have nothing to wear. It has to be done, Alison.
Oh, I just go with the dumpster vibe. I just make it quite clear wherever we go that they dress themselves. Like, it's got nothing to do with me. They're old enough, they're big enough and ugly enough to be fully responsible for it now. Well, do you know what I'm doing this week? It's quite exciting, Megan. I'm getting ready to go somewhere.
Are you leaving the house?
I'm leaving the house. I'm actually going to the beach for a weekend with some girlfriends, and I cannot wait. We are going to the whitest sand in the world. In fact, we will be heading to Holmes Beach. Holmes Beach on Jervis Bay. Look it up. It is stunning. It is the whitest sand in the world. And we will be down there for the weekend, you know, drinking water, obviously, and eating whole wheat bread. Of course we will. So that's what I'm doing, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's been a while. All right, so you will find me at alisontait.com, alisontait.com. You will find Megan at childrensbooksdaily.com, and you will find all of the show notes for all of the books and all of the things that we have talked about today at yourkidsnextread.com. Do pop over and have a look, and we will see you next time.
See you later.